This is Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Off to East LA County now, where presidential politics recently overtook a public park. This is the city of Walnut in the outer reaches of the San Gabriel Valley. Supporters of President Donald Trump have gathered in the hot morning sun for a car caravan beginning at Creekside Park. Their trucks, sedans, and SUVs are decked out in Trump fandom. Displays of party patriotism are ramping up, even in reliably blue LA County, and it is a group of Filipino-American political activists that is leading this one.
Aren't Democrats so dramatic? They are such babies. They are such snowflakes.
That's Mark Ang. He's the event organizer and founder of Asian Industry B2B. It's a nonprofit pro-business group.
When I saw Trump and his track record of 4 years, really fighting for all my values, like basically he checks all my boxes. I'm so proud to support a president that is common sense, practical, and is conservatism at work.
Ang is one of an estimated 600,000 plus Filipinos who live in the greater LA area. It's the largest concentration outside the Philippine archipelago. Now, obviously, there is a lot of political diversity within the Filipino-American community. KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb spent a couple of days with Ang and other organizers to bring you this report.
Filipino support for President Donald Trump in Los Angeles centers around a few things.
It's the small government, the pro-life, and all of those. Being able to have the moral position to stand with, because I belong to a minority group, I'm also pro-immigration, but I'm pro-legal immigration, because me and my family took the legal way to come here. I don't know of any other way of doing that.
Noel Omega is one of the president's ardent supporters. He's originally from Manila, the capital of the Philippines, and he came to the U.S. with his parents in the late 1970s, at the age of 17.
Dito may mga giveaway sila rito eh.
We're meeting at one of his friends' houses in Burbank, a couple miles east of the airport. Here, a group of like-minded Filipinos are chatting in English and in Tagalog as they decorate their cars. Tapestries with the president's 2020 slogan, "Keep America Great," are secured to back windshields.
Yeah, a lot of people are just using basic duct tape and, you know, putting up flags here supporting the president.
Flags on big PVC poles hang out of backseat windows. On one side, the stars and stripes. And on the other, the flag of the Philippines with its distinctive red, white, and blue colors and golden yellow sun. Ever since Omega became a naturalized citizen, the Republican Party has had his vote. And he says that's true of many Filipinos of his generation, age 50 and older.
Many of the Filipinos that I know are Christian, very heavy Christian, many Catholics.
So religion is a big deal when it comes to deciding one's...
Religion is a big deal, but also the family values that come with it, because I think religion also is big in family values. So that's really important.
Like many other ethnic groups, Filipino Republicans tend to come from the older generations and the immigrants rather than their children. But there's still no denying Filipino support in LA for the GOP. Omega considers himself and his Filipino peers part of what the president calls the silent majority. It's a phrase popularized by former President Richard Nixon.
We don't participate in a lot of polls. But we do make our voices heard when it comes to votes.
Did everyone get no one 16-yard sign?
One of the voters who doesn't take part in polls is Monica Chan. And the car decorating and extra-large pizza eating is happening in her front yard. Chan supports President Donald Trump because of his stand on immigration. She says she had to wait to come to the U.S. legally, so why should anyone else be allowed to shortcut the system?
legal immigration is very important, because I waited for 6 years from the time I was petitioned by my mom, and I had to wait. I had to do the legal process, the due process of law, really, because a lot of people have come and here as immigrants. They waited patiently for their status to be processed. So I believe in that.
Another selling point for Trump among Filipinos, the president's posture toward China.
China has also unlawfully claimed territory in the Pacific Ocean, threatening freedom of navigation and international trade. The Chinese government has continually violated its promises to us and so many other nations.
That's Trump speaking outside the White House earlier this year. And one of those other nations he's referring to is the Philippines. Territorial sovereignty is a big deal for Filipino Americans, says Mark Eng.
Recently, China, as a world power, has been invading some of the Philippine islands in the South China Sea that is internationally recognized as sovereign Filipino territories. And they've been coming in and taking over and disrespecting borders. So that is something that we really, as Filipinos on a foreign policy level, really support his coming down strong against China in that aspect.
Eng has ready answers for questions about his political views, maybe because he's had to explain them before.
What is it like to be a Trump supporter in a very liberal city?
I think it really teaches you to really think your position, because obviously if everyone around you thinks a certain way, you are forced to look into your own values and say, am I wrong? Because everyone else around me disagrees, and that actually strengthened my resolve.
Eng also points out that this very liberal city is more diverse than it appears.
I also find that because California is huge and we have the sheer numbers of just being a big state, there are different pockets that are more conservative. I think where we're at right now in Burbank is a purple area. There's a lot of both Republicans and Democrats. If you drill down to the details, you'll see that it's not all that liberal.
Even so, Eng is realistic. A Republican candidate for president has not carried L.A. County since the mid-1980s. As I'm leaving, I catch Henrik Helgeson in his front yard, watering his driveway with a garden hose. He lives two doors down from the Chan family, where the decorating party took place. And Helgeson's home could not look more different. Instead of Trump 2020 flags, he's got a couple lawn signs supporting Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff.
I've stayed home now for 7-8 months, right? But it is what it is.
A car just drove by and they kind of heckled you for having shift signs here in your driveway.
Yeah, but I think that says more about them than it says me.
The car carried participants from the Trump decorating party. Just another example of how purple parts of LA County can be. For KCRW, I'm Benjamin Gottlieb.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. If you've been missing the trip to the mall, you're in luck, because indoor malls in LA County are now allowed to open again for the first time in months, starting today. That's because COVID-19 numbers in the county have been going down since early August, when as many as 40 people were dying then every day and thousands were hospitalized. And now the president, with COVID himself, says after the treatments that he's gotten, he's feeling better. Better than he has in 20 years, and telling people not to be afraid of the virus, not to let it dominate you, as he says. When you're looking for a reality check, you go to science and the experts. And Paula Cannon is professor of microbiology and immunology at the Keck School of Medicine over at USC. Paula, welcome back.
Hello, Steve. Good to be back.
We'll get to the president in a moment, but first off, what are the COVID numbers looking like for LA County? I mean, the numbers clearly aren't as bad as they were in the summer, but many places across this great land of ours are seeing a resurgence. I mean, how do you read the numbers here?
Yeah, so I think cautiously optimistic is probably a good way of thinking about it for LA County. Our numbers are holding steady at less than 1,000 cases a day. So that's not great. You know, we'd like to have, you know, below 700. That's kind of the goal we're aiming for, but at least we're not, you know, going up again. So I kind of feel like, you know, we've all got our sort of our fingers crossed at this moment that these levels stay flat and then even start to go down a bit, which would kind of be bucking the trend that a lot of other states are seeing.
Obviously, we're in the middle of fall now. You know, we heard about the second wave that could come in the fall, and I'm not sure that we've really been in waves, that this has just been bad from the start. But what do you see as far as fall and flu season upon us?
Sure. So of course, the reason everybody worries about the fall is as weather gets worse, you know, people are indoors more, and we know that that's when respiratory viruses like flu and like COVID are going to be spread more. I think we've got some advantages in LA. I mean, let's not forget, you know, our weather stays pretty good through the fall. So I hope people take advantage of that and continue to be outdoors as much as possible, you know, including and especially if they're eating or they're together with, you know, a couple of friends or at a restaurant, that we take advantage of our weather.
Are you ready to go back to the shopping mall, by the way?
You know, some shopping malls have very, very big spaces. You know, there's pretty good ventilation in them. So, you know, the actual malls, as long as they really are below capacity and people are wearing masks, I think are fairly low risk. But, you know, that's kind of a personal decision everybody would make.
You know, Professor, we know that low income and people of color have been much harder hit by this virus. The California Health Department has added an equity requirement. You've heard about this, I'm sure.
Yes.
To reopening, right? So counties that are able to reopen have to fulfill this equity requirement, basically saying that LA County, for example, can't just look at overall numbers. It has to make sure that the numbers in the hardest hit communities also make the grade. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I think this is an excellent idea. And frankly, it's just to stop counties, you know, gaming the system. You know, what we worry about is if overall the county levels look good, but you still have high case rates concentrated in low-income neighborhoods, then that means the whole county is still at risk. So it really forces counties to just make sure that they're, you know, putting their efforts where they need to be to sort of address every neighborhood.
To the president we go now. President Trump has been at the center of all talk about the virus since he announced last week that he contracted it. We don't really know exactly when he contracted it or when he was contagious. A whole bunch of people working at the White House have tested positive as well. The president says he's already feeling much better. He says, don't be afraid of COVID. Don't let it dominate your life. We have great treatments. There's a vaccine coming momentarily. How much better are we at treating the virus now? So let's start with therapeutics and the things that he's on. I know he's on a steroid right now, dexamethasone, right? And I know that he's had this experimental compassionate use cocktail that he was using when he was at Walter Reed. Talk about what he has been getting and what other people can get or maybe cannot.
Sure. So, I mean, Trump's like a one-man clinical trial, isn't he? He's pretty much, you know, checking the boxes of everything that would be on my can I get it list if I got COVID. But, you know, the good news is that some of the things he's on are now actually quite widely available. So we could start with remdesivir, which is an antiviral drug. It's shown some efficacy. It's not, you know, it's not a home run. It's not stunning. But it, you know, it does show some effect on patients who are moderately sick, you know, people in hospital but not yet on a ventilator. And that's now pretty widely available. And the second thing he's on is this new antibody cocktail. Now, that's where being the president is an advantage. This is two antibodies from Regeneron. And the idea is that they would stick on the outside of the virus and stop it infecting new cells in the body. What's, you know, what's useful about being the president there is he, you know, he got to jump the queue. There's only been a couple of hundred people being given this drug so far, and we say it's for compassionate use. But again, you know, it's not clear how useful that is. The early data from the company say that it only really works for people who haven't yet made their own antibodies. And of course, we don't know if Trump is in that situation. And then the last big one he's on is the steroid dexamethasone. And this one has us all kind of scratching our heads a little bit, because dexamethasone is kind of a bit of a mixed bag, and you normally only would reserve that for patients who are really seriously ill. And so the fact that he was given it kind of early on may actually not have been the right thing to do. But basically, you know, these three treatments are probably what, you know, any patient with COVID would be, you know, their doctor would be looking at least in the near future when the antibodies become more available.
And again, if you're president, you're going to get those treatments, the best treatments, right? If you're John or Jane Q. Public and you're, God forbid, in a hospital and you're struggling, are you going to be able to get those, the cocktail and the I mean, certainly the steroid. I mean, the corticosteroids are available at the hospital, right?
Yeah. And, you know, being the president and being able to get everything you wish for might not necessarily be a good thing. Again, we still don't know which of these drugs work, and we certainly don't know which ones work in combination. So the kitchen sink approach, while, you know, I wish him all the best and I hope that, you know, this has really helped him turn the corner on his infection, we don't know, and it's certainly still early days. We know this disease, you know, people can feel great for a week or 2 weeks and then go downhill. So I hope and I imagine he's being very closely monitored still.
What about the prospects for a vaccine? He says a vaccine is just around the corner. Scientists and obviously the pharmaceutical companies are saying, whoa, wait a second, we're not that close, but we're working on it.
Yeah, so I think, you know, there has been some aggressive timelines that have been suggested by the leading vaccine candidates, but it really all depends on how quickly they can get their safety and efficacy data. Probably the most aggressive is AstraZeneca. They're saying that they're going to know in October whether or not their vaccine works, and then they could start, rolling the vaccine out, although this is the vaccine that is actually on pause in the United States by our FDA because there was an adverse event. There's also RNA-based vaccines, as they're called, from both Pfizer and Moderna. Pfizer also says that they'll know in October and that they could have something like 100 million doses ready by the end of the year. Whether those doses go to regular Americans or whether they first go to our frontline workers or people more at risk, I think is a reasonable conversation. And there's probably an expectation that they won't be available in your local CVS by the end of the year. And then the head of the CDC, Dr. Redfield, he's actually said that he doesn't think there's going to be a vaccine before February at the very earliest, and he actually thinks in the summer. So, you know, different predictions, and probably too early to say with any certainty until we start seeing some of the safety data coming through.
Before we let you go, I do want to make mention of the fact that we had the Nobel Prize in Chemistry awarded to two women, one of whom is at the University of California, Berkeley, in a realm that you're very familiar with, and this is called CRISPR. This is the development of a gene editing tool, and this is your day job, isn't it?
That's right, Steve. Yeah, when I'm not talking to you about COVID, I actually work on gene editing and CRISPR. So today is a very exciting day because Jennifer Doudna at UC Berkeley and Emmanuel Charpentier have both been awarded the Nobel Prize for their discovery of CRISPR, which is, you know, really revolutionizing a lot of what we can do, everything from basic biology to potential therapies. So it's great to see them recognized for their important work.
This is molecular life science, right? And getting to the heart of human life.
Human life, but also, you know, plant life and animal life and developing new types of medicine and new model systems and new crops and really a phenomenal potential.
Paula Cannon, professor of microbiology and immunology at Keck School of Medicine over at USC. Professor, thanks as always for being with us.
Take care, Steve. Bye.
Moving on now with KCRW's Greater LA. I'm Steve Chiotakis. It's been pretty hot the last month. The good news is there's a cooling trend. But man, we have been toasty here in Southern California. So what about a dip in the pool? Ah, doesn't that feel refreshing? What if you added another luxury, though, to the mix? Oh, you know, like maybe looking at some art while you're swimming. No, it's not a gimmick. It's an actual gallery. It's a gallery that's open now in a pool in the Hollywood Hills. And our art insider, Lindsay Preston-Zappas, who's editor-in-chief of Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles, went for a swim. Actually, went for a swim to check it out, and here she is with us right now, all dripping wet. Hey, Lindsay.
Hey, Steve.
You're not dripping wet, by the way.
Not currently.
No, but you did go for a dip recently. So tell us about that trip into the pool to check out some art.
Yeah, so this is a new gallery. It's in a pool. It's called Maya's Pool, after the name of the gallerist named Maya Shaw. So yeah, you show up to this private residence in the Hollywood Hills, like you said. You kind of walk down some stairs, and the pool is sort of sunken down below street level. So you're surrounded by these beautiful cypress trees, and it's kind of shady. It has sort of a moody vibe to it. And then, you know, you kind of make small talk for a few and kind of like decide when you're gonna actually get into the pool. But eventually I had a bathing suit on. You get a pair of sanitized goggles from the gallerist, and the press releases are laminated, so you can actually carry it with you into the pool and kind of use it to go swim around to each artwork. And this particular show is called Ley Lines, and it's by ceramic artist Amelia Lockwood. And the ceramic pieces are kind of abstract, and in this context, they totally feel like sunken artifacts that are kind of sunken below the surface of the water. And then instead of just a normal art viewer, you become sort of like an explorer, like diving down to try and get a better look at these things.
I imagine, you know, it's a quiet way to see the work. You really can't hear anything underwater, right? But other senses might be stimulated as well. I mean, you can feel the water around you, obviously. It's really just you and the work.
Yeah, definitely. It's super intimate. For me, I was really struck by the element of breath. I feel like I can't really hold my breath very long. So there are a couple pieces that are in the deep end of the pool. And so it's this experience of taking a deep breath and then holding your breath and diving down and really trying to get a glance at an artwork for a few seconds before you kind of kick off the bottom and come up. So you're kind of navigating your own body, your breath, as you try to navigate and approach these objects again and again from a new angle each time you dive down to take a look.
How is the gallerist making it safe during COVID? I think is a question
right.
for me, because
yeah.
you know, we're in these really weird times right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one, it's outdoors, and so that's a, you know, safer space than being inside a closed space. The appointments are also a big part of that. So you can only come to the gallery by appointment, and you're the only group that's there. So I went with my husband. It was just the two of us that got to be there in the space. There'll be no other viewers that are there. The gallerist and the artist were both there, but they're both wearing masks, and there was plenty of space to kind of social distance. And then, you know, they offer you goggles to wear, but they're pre-sanitized between each use. And from what I've read from the CDC, I'm definitely not an expert, but the virus actually can't spread through chlorine, so pools are pretty safe.
Why did Maya choose to exhibit this work in a pool in the first place? I mean, like, how would you rate the experience of seeing work in a pool as opposed to checking it out in a gallery? I mean, it is kind of like a gimmick, right?
I mean, it depends how you look at it. So Maya grew up swimming. She was a swimmer, and she told me that the pool was really her second home. So for her, it didn't feel like that much of a stretch of like, oh, I live in this space every day. She's very familiar with it. Like, why not put art in there? Like, for her, it was kind of an easy leap. But she's really excited about this idea of letting art live in the world and how that might change our experience with it and kind of make it more approachable. And I think that's the biggest difference with this new gallery. You know, I think it can be intimidating for a lot of people to go into a gallery or museum if you haven't really spent much time or had much experience in those spaces. But we've all been in a pool. Like, we've all held our breath and dove underwater. So I think that's a very connective, familiar experience that people can really relate to. And it will re-energize this experience of connecting with art.
And if you want to make an appointment and do some exploring, can you still do that? How long is the exhibit up?
This show actually does close quite quickly. It's closing this weekend on the 9th, but there still may be a handful of appointments left. And then there's a new exhibition opening on October 31st, aptly titled Deep End. and yeah, since it's only one group at a time for an hour at a time, the appointments are filling up pretty quickly. So go to the gallery's Instagram. It's Maya's Pool. It's spelled M-A-I-A. And yeah, find the appointment link there and check it out.
It really does sound cool. Lindsay Preston Zappas, our resident swimming art insider and editor-in-chief over at Carla. Lindsay, as always, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
You know, one of the things I love about doing the show is being able to bring you the beauty of Greater LA, the beauty of music, too, that you're hearing these guitar riffs from Eddie Van Halen. May he rest in peace. Whether that be the people of this unique and wonderful place, whether it be the spirit of coming together in a time of need, whether it be underwater art, who would have thought? Any kind of art, for that matter, show business, music, what have you. Don't get me wrong, there are so many problems in Greater LA, and we tell you about those things, too, but the beauty of this region keeps us going. And you know what? You keep us going. There's power in numbers. That's why we're calling this fundraiser the Power in Numbers Drive. And when you come together with us, we can do anything. In this fundraiser, we're asking you to support the service that we provide every single day. If KCRW is a part of your life, then help us to continue doing the things that you use, the things that you enjoy day in and day out. KCRW.com/give. How much is KCRW a part of your life? Is it worth, say, how much you pay for a cup of coffee in the morning every day? Or is it worth how much you would pay for a subscription to the New York Times? KCRW.com/give. And thank you for your support. I do want to thank a few folks. Rodney Presley from L.A., thank you for your added gift. Craig from Santa Monica, a renewal. Teague from L.A. Frederick, Palm Springs. How about Timothy Johnston from Beaverton, Oregon? Wow. Stephen Morgan from Claremont, California. Thank you for your support. We even had someone from Belgium. And Cesar Martinez, thank you for all you do at KCRW to keep us all informed. We're glad you're with us, and we're glad you support this radio station. Thanks for all you do. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have yourself a great day.